Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 4:44 p.m. and that is Central Time. Today is January 27th. I thought we'd kick off with natural gas. It was up over $2. So that's a significant move, but it's really only very short term in nature because it was the result of a short covering rally on the back of the end of the month. So we're going to see prices come straight back down tomorrow, and we can see that very clearly on the futures curve. We can see that the front end is in the region of about $6, and we've already moved it into the March. So now the price is down to $4.32. So this is an awfully big move, and it really helps to highlight that we're in an extraordinary situation in terms of energy, that there is a shortage of supply around, and that there's an illiquidity in the market that allows these kinds of events to happen. I haven't seen a move like this in natural gas just on an intraday basis in an awfully long time. Usually these kinds of events were associated with natural disasters like hurricanes, and even that's no longer as much of a risk because there's so much onshore domestic supply in the USA these days. But it is a reminder to energy investors of the dangers of being short towards the end of a contract expiry and relying on the last day of the month to roll forward contracts. But it also helps to highlight just how volatile some of these commodities can be. And I think this is also helping to exacerbate some of the pressures that are coming to bear on the energy sector. Oil prices are still really quite firm and holding here around the $90 area and closing out the day really at exactly $90. But this hasn't looked like anything other than a very mild consolidation in this area. And as long as that remains the case, we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. And that's important because when we think about gasoline prices, well, they're obviously influenced by crude oil prices, and they are marching higher. So that's also acting as something of a tailwind to inflationary pressures. Now, as we are 2 days out from the Federal Reserve meeting, there are a couple of different factors that are going to come to bear. Well, I think one thing is obvious, that the dollar is rebounding in pretty emphatic fashion. And it broke out to new recovery highs in here today. This has been a really impressive rebound off the lower side of the longer term range. And there is nothing on the chart says that it isn't going to go straight back up and test the upper side of the range around 100. So this is pricing in quite a bit of additional dollar strength. And that's taking a lump out of gold. So gold prices were down in here today and back testing the sequence of higher reaction lows. So if the trend is going to remain consistent on the upside, or at least the support building phase is to remain reasonably consistent, then prices should begin to find support relatively soon. And silver, which has held a sequence of lower rally highs for most of the last year, has also pulled back from the region of the 200-day moving average over the course of this week and was down in a rather dynamic manner in here today. Palladium, on the other hand, is pushing on the upside, and it was in sharply positive territory yesterday and then followed through on the upside in here today. So this is a really powerful rebound, going up from 1500 to 2360 in the space of only about 3 weeks is a really impressive rebound. And of course, palladium is primarily associated with catalytic converters. And then we can also think about, well, that's the automotive sector. And some of the leading decliners in here today were in the automotive sector. So Tesla is now pulling back below the 200-day moving average, and it's below the peak from early 2021. So this is a significant drawdown. It's down $100 in here today, and that's following the earnings call yesterday. So Tesla will not be releasing any new vehicles in 2022. And they're now also starting to feel the pain from the chip shortage. And of course, that was also something that the Federal Reserve talked about, that they don't anticipate now that the chip shortage will be resolved until sometime in 2023. So that's obviously one of the significant tailwinds for inflationary pressures. And Apple announced earnings today, and they were positive, and they anticipate that there will be another record quarter for the March quarter, the quarter ending in March. So the share price is up about 3% in the after hours, so that's beginning to demonstrate some support coming through. And certainly we need some I think support to start to come through in the wider market. When we look at the Nasdaq, it has pulled back below the trend mean, and that's the first time it's done that since 2020. And it's trading a long way away from the 1,000-day moving average. So we need to see it find support. We then need to see it push back above the 200-day moving average. And right now, it's struggling to hold a low. So it certainly needs an upward catalyst, and some strength from Apple would certainly go a long way towards supporting it. One thing that I think is particularly relevant when we think about the wider market, and the S&P 500 is in the region of the 200-day moving average, but also below it. And it's down about 10% from the peak. Now, we can also think about 2018, and I think that this experience that we have with the markets right now, the closest analogy is 2018. And at the beginning of the year, the market pulled back by 10%, and that was not enough to stay the hand of the Federal Reserve. Then we moved through the year, they continued to raise rates, and they continued to engage in balance sheet runoff. And they took approximately $500 billion out of circulation. Then we had an issue with the high yield market. But right now, high yield has been really quiet. So this isn't something that's going to bother the Federal Reserve. High yield spreads are around 300 basis points, and that is not problematic. So this isn't something that the Federal Reserve is going to be worrying about. And obviously, financial conditions are coming off of some of the most accommodative levels ever. And they want to, it's in fact, it's part of their policy that they want these financial conditions to become tighter, and they certainly are becoming tighter. Well, that would suggest that there's still quite a lot of potential for the stock market to experience some additional selling pressure. Now, what I thought is rather interesting here is if we take the NYSE advanced decline line, it's now pulling back below the 200-day moving average. And this isn't the first time it's done that. But one thing we can certainly say is that in secular bull markets, it doesn't generally pull back below the 1,000-day moving average, and it's a good long time, all the way back to the beginning of 2016, since we last seen it come back into the region of the 1,000-day moving average. And we can also go back, and we have plenty of back history for the NYSE stocks, so we can see what it looked like in major bull markets in the past. So let me see if I can get this to sorry, I can't type and chew gum, I'm afraid. Unfortunately, that isn't going to go back to beyond 2004. But we can definitely think about this in that there's been a loss of momentum, and this isn't the first time we've had losses of momentum. And the average stock is now falling, and it's below the 200-day moving average. So this is putting downward pressure on stocks generally. We could be in for volatile trading environments in the majority of indices for at least the next few weeks. And the VIX index is continuing to hold the 30 area. And it wasn't quite as high as it was over the last few days, but it would certainly be comforting for investors if this VIX started to come back down. And of course, the bond volatility index has also been really quite firm and holding historically high levels. So we're at higher levels on the VIX now than we have been since the spike in March of 2020. But the one thing that is also worth highlighting is one of the reasons why bond yields haven't been surging higher is because of relative value. And the generic European 10-year, which really is the same as the Bund, is still yielding a negative 5 basis points. And 10-year Treasury yields, by comparison, yield about 1.8%, or not far off it. So that's a good reason why the bond yield isn't surging higher, because you've got a strong dollar. And when the dollar's trending higher, and you can pick up an extra 200 basis points, well, then that's obviously a more attractive prospect than earning a negative return in Europe. So that's creating additional demand for US dollar denominated assets. It's certainly true of Europe, and it's true of Japan as well, because the Japanese yen is trending lower against the dollar. And I think that this is a trend that has legs because it's broken a really lengthy sequence of lower rally highs. And then we can think about some of those more value-oriented stock markets like the Nikkei, where it has pulled back in a violent manner when denominated in US dollars. It's now in the region of the 1,000-day moving average. And if we look at that in local currencies, well, it still has a bit to go to get down to those levels. But we're also well shy of the peak from 1989 in local currency terms as well. With the yen trending downwards, then that is going to lend support to Japanese exporters. So it's an important characteristic. And we also see that European indices remain relative strength performers. And the FTSE 100 was up 1% in here today and continuing to push on the upside. So it's now back testing its peak again. And obviously the FTSE is a very defensive index, and it's got significant weightings with different aristocrats. And the FTSE 350 has about a 9%, or between a 9 and 10% weighting in a significant in four different asset classes that should benefit in an environment where there's rising interest rates, or at least fears about inflation and an inability of central banks to raise interest rates fast enough. I think it's probably the more correct way of stating it. And the index continues to pause around the all-time peaks, but it doesn't look like anything other than a pause, and more likely than not, we're going to start to see it pushing up and out of this range before long. Now, when we think about the Eurostoxx index, sorry, I don't know why that's not typing correctly, but the FTSE is right in the region of its peaks, and the Eurostoxx index has been ranging for 21 years and is just in the region of its all-time peak from back in 2000, and it does look like it's going to push up and out of this range. And of course, it's trading on a substantial valuation discount. And this is most particularly true of the banking sectors in the European region. The FTSE 350 banks was up a couple of percent in here today and continuing to recover. And European banks probably need more time to do or to recover, but they are in the process of breaking an extraordinarily lengthy sequence of lower rally highs. So even European banks are starting to do better. And of course, that's tied towards inflationary pressures as well. And Japanese banks are back above the 1,000-day moving average and also have a very lengthy period of underperformance, but are at least firming here. So banks internationally continue to look like they can do better from here. But of course, a strong dollar also makes it less attractive from the perspective of a US investor to invest abroad unless there's clear evidence of relative strength. And certainly Europe and particularly the UK are exhibiting that relative strength. Then Australia pulled back sharply as well in early trading today, and it's coming back into the region of the 1,000-day moving average as well. And generally speaking, that 1,000-day moving average has offered support during bigger pullbacks during secular bulls. So, of course, it does beg the question, are we still in a secular bull market? And obviously, interest rates are a very big part of that discussion. But then we should also consider, well, what is the animating force behind the newer part of this bull market? And it has to be resources. So you have people like John Kerry talking about the need to accelerate measures at decarbonization. And you have Tim Cook saying that Apple is carbon neutral in its own operations and is looking to be completely carbon neutral in its international manufacturing operations. Of course, since they've outsourced most of the manufacturing, they're going to make that somebody else's problem. But at the same time, nobody wants to have a mine in their backyard. So Rio Tinto has gone through a lot of trouble with Serbia, and their new mine there has been shut down, and not least for political reasons. And the Biden administration shut down the building of a new mine in Minnesota yesterday. So you have, on the one hand, you have the climate czar talking about the need to decarbonize, and then you have governments left and right saying that they don't want to have the mines in their backyard. And those are mutually incompatible objectives because if the world wants to decarbonize, there's going to have to be a lot of new infrastructure built. Well, we can think about steel in those terms as well, because if we're talking about infrastructure, steel is integral to the steel or to the infrastructure sector. And Nucor in the US was in positive territory in here today, and it is so far at least holding the breakout from that longer term base formation. But then we can also think about some of the other steel companies, and they're not doing quite as well. So POSCO, for example, is pulling back in a rather dynamic manner. And a lot of this is going to have to do with what is going on in China. So China has responded to what the Federal Reserve has said, and they're going to go it alone in terms of providing assistance. So the renminbi is beginning to weaken, and the dollar is working on an upside weekly key reversal against it. And of course, the renminbi strengthened pretty significantly between the middle of 2020 all the way down to the low this week, or to its, I guess this is shown inversely, so it's the peak. And if China is going to stimulate, either fiscally, monetarily, or by easing access to liquidity, then that should be supportive to economic growth and to demand for credit in the wider economy. But it's unlikely they're going to be able to do that if they continue to hold a peg on the currency. So it's quite likely that the currency is going to devalue from here. And then the stock market remains weak. The CSI 300 broke lower in here today, and the Chinex index also broke lower. So we've definitely seen a lot of weakness coming through in international markets, and obviously this is in response to the dollar rallying, and also, and not just because of the anticipation that interest rates will rise, but also that liquidity is being restricted, and additionally that we are seeing less demand for speculative activity because people are raising cash. And obviously there are some sectors that are most acutely affected by the prospect of rising interest rates, and the IPO ETF is accelerating lower and is quite likely to fully unwind the big boom that we had in 2020. The SPAC index is also declining quickly, and an increasingly large number of these deals are simply being cancelled and money being returned to investors. So that particular boom and source of new IPOs is drying up. When we think about the cryptocurrencies, Bitcoin wasn't able to hold the rebound yesterday, and then was unchanged today, and in after hours trading is a little bit steadier. And I think that is primarily because of Apple, with the potential that Apple will rebound and start to reinstill confidence. There's still the potential that the move that we saw on the downside earlier this week was climactic, and that we're at least going to see a rebound and process of ranging. And I think this is also quite similar to what we had in 2018, that it took a 20% pullback to really activate the Powell put, and we're only down about 10%. So it would suggest that there is still room for additional downside on Wall Street. And but it doesn't all have to happen immediately, that we could have a rebound to unwind the short-term oversold condition, and subsequently to push back up towards the lower side of the overhead trading range, and then perhaps roll over again. That's why I haven't been opening new short positions. I think that the risk of a rebound is at least equally balanced against the risk of an additional decline, and I don't like 50-50 bets. And we've already pulled back by 10%. So we're in certainly still in a volatile environment. And Apple's positive earnings will certainly add or lend some support tomorrow. But the dollar continues to rally, and the Federal Reserve has scared investors because they don't know how much they're going to raise interest rates. Of course, if growth falters because the stock market is pulling back, well, then that is certainly going to impede their ability to raise interest rates. So obviously, this is a very fluid environment. One thing we've certainly seen is that value is exhibiting relative strength, and the value index in the US is continuing to hold the 200-day moving average, but European markets are doing better, and they're certainly benefiting from the weakness of their respective currencies relative to the dollar, so they're getting some of the benefit from the nominal price appreciation in much the same way that Japan did in 2014, or I guess 2013. And I think there's potential that Japan can also rebound in the not so distant future, and particularly if the Bank of Japan defends its yield curve control policy. So, big drawdowns definitely create buying opportunities, and we're certainly seeing relative strength coming through in a number of ex-US markets. The bigger question is, how much will the Federal Reserve actually be able to raise rates? Because I've certainly seen that the market is pricing in as many as five this year, and I think that is completely unrealistic. And then you've got central banks like Goldman Sachs pricing in seven or eight over the course of the next 18 months, and I think that's extremely ambitious. And we know that the quantity of debt outstanding has increased by 25% in the space of the last couple of years. And that means that the cost of servicing the debt is rising as well. And raising interest rates is only going to make it worse. So we're going to run into a situation where rising yields are going to impact growth. And if growth is impacted, well, then the Federal Reserve won't have much choice than to become a bit more dovish. And then there also, and I think it wasn't something that most people were paying attention to, but they said that they don't want to hold mortgage bonds anymore. And the national average mortgage rate has popped on the upside. And of course, property prices were up about 20% last year on a year-over-year basis. Obviously, that's contributing to inflationary pressures. It's contributing to the kind of inflation that the Federal Reserve monitors. They might like to see mortgage rates move higher from here in order to curtail some of the appetite for new homes, and that would also help to moderate inflation. But it does look like the significant bull market that we've had in semiconductors is over, and the SOX index has now experienced a or is in the process of experiencing a massive reaction against the prevailing trend, and it is now back below the 200-day moving average and is coming back in an accelerating manner. And I think that there's not an awful lot that can be done about that. We're seeing that a significant number of the companies are not predicting great results. And Teradyne was the big disappointment in here today, and the share was off about 20%. So we've had some really very significant trend deterioration in terms of the semiconductors sector, whereas the significant portion of the agriculture sector and the energy sector continue to do well, and it's usually relative strength in a bear market does help to, or cyclical bear, does help to identify where the next big trends are going to be. Obviously, you have Xi Jinping talking about the need to preserve living standards as China moves towards its net zero objectives. And that suggests a go slow. So China doesn't want to rock the boat economically. And obviously, that is probably positive for the Chinese economy. But it also is a bit of a go slow on some of the more ambitious demand growth forecasts for commodities. So this is also an additional theme that needs to be monitored rather closely. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.